this is the big question I think everybody has. Does mom really have to give up all the carbs? What does that look like?
No, please don't give up all your carbs. you know, it is really common to think that is the thing that you have to do, because we know that carbohydrates turn into glucose. So it makes perfect sense that, okay, if I want to lower my blood sugar, my glucose levels, then I would lower how many carbs I eat, right? But you need carbohydrate because, like I said, it's our body's main source of fuel, but you're also growing a human. And I think sometimes what gets lost when we talk about nutrition needs for gestational diabetes is that you do have additional calorie needs because you are pregnant.
Getting pregnant and giving birth are two of the most exciting things you can ever hope to experience in this life. The moment you think you could be pregnant, you're frantically searching for all the best information, which is why you're here today. I'm Stephanie King, and with my many years of experience as a professional childbirth educator, doula, and lover of all things pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, I'm here to make preparing for your birth enjoyable, empowering, and totally easy. Each week, I'll cover different topics, interview professionals, and get into the nitty-gritty birth stories from mamas just like you. And when you're ready for more, you can join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I take you step by step through exactly how to prepare your mind, body, spirit, and partner for a birth you love. So let's get started. Welcome back to the podcast, you guys. This week's reviewer of the week is LMP from Michigan. She says, "Fearless birth thanks to this podcast. I wanted to reach out and personally thank you for all of the work that you put into your web course and podcast. I listened to your podcast every day throughout my recent pregnancy, and I know that it made a significant difference in my pregnancy and labor. I am a first-time mama, and I got to have the home birth of my dreams next to my husband, mom, and doula and midwife, which is awesome. You definitely had all the support team that you were looking for. Throughout my first trimester, I was so anxious about labor and delivery and was so uneducated in all aspects of birth. Thanks to your podcast, not only was I empowered to have my baby at home, but it was unmedicated too. And despite complications and almost needing to transfer to the hospital, I had so much peace and confidence throughout every contraction. My whole labor was only 9 hours, with pushing just over 1 hour. My midwife said if baby hadn't been in a posterior position, she would have missed my birth." Which is crazy, especially for a first-time mom. So way to go, mom. "I know not everyone gets to have a birth like this, but I know my experience is thanks to the preparations I made from listening to your online course and podcast. Thank you." Thank you for your review, and thank you for tuning in. And for moms that are new here, or maybe you've been around for a while and you're looking for really great information about a bunch of pregnancy topics, today is going to be great for you too. I have with me here Leslie Flannery. I've been following her for a while on Instagram. If you don't follow her on Instagram, you need to. I'm going to let her introduce where you can find her in just a moment. And this is even if you do not have gestational diabetes, which is what we're going to talk about now, because you don't know and you could end up having it. Even if you don't have it with this pregnancy, you could have it with the next, or maybe you haven't found out you have it quite yet. This is a topic that you should know about whether or not you think you're going to be diagnosed. But she is a registered dietitian. She specializes in helping women with gestational diabetes lower their blood sugar and deliver a healthy baby. She has an online coaching program for moms with gestational diabetes. And with that, Leslie, will you talk about where people can find you? Because I really do want the people that are listening to latch onto you, go read and look at all of your stuff. Plus, you're just fun to watch. Listen to all your stuff and then look into the coaching program if they have gestational diabetes, because that's where I would head if I had it myself. So take a moment and say hi.
Yeah. Hi, thanks so much for having me. I love talking about gestational diabetes. And usually you'll find me on Instagram talking about it. And so I am at Gestational Diabetes Nutrition over on Instagram. I'm always in my DMs, so never feel, you know, scared to reach out that way either. But yes, I do run a coaching program, and it's really, I build it to be a high level of coaching to where we can talk, you know, and adjust blood sugars, change constantly. So it's very involved if you're looking for that type of help. I also have a website, gdmnutrition.com, so you can find me at those two places.
Awesome. And I will make sure to include that in the show notes and the email this week for everybody who is listening. And we'll talk about it one more time at the end so that we don't miss that at all. With that, though, I would love to, and because I know that there are new moms listening here, they have no idea what we're talking about. You know, diabetes is a thing. What is gestational diabetes?
Yeah, it's kind of its own little animal, I always say, right? So gestational diabetes is basically diabetes, insulin resistance in pregnancy. So brought on by placental hormones. That's what makes us more insulin resistant. And then once you deliver the baby and you deliver the placenta, gestational diabetes resolves itself. Now, of course, there could always be underlying prediabetes that someone has or type 2 diabetes. That's why it's important to be screened after you deliver the baby to make sure that's not what we were seeing in pregnancy. But true gestational diabetes is just diabetes in pregnancy.
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. What is diabetes for people that don't know what diabetes is?
Yeah, diabetes is insulin resistant. So basically, gestational diabetes is most similar to type 2 diabetes. And when I say insulin resistance, what that means is your insulin isn't, maybe your pancreas might not be releasing enough insulin, or it's just not moving efficiently enough to pull the blood sugar from your bloodstream and put it into your cells. So when you eat something, carbohydrates specifically, those break down into glucose, which is our body's main source of fuel. And that's what's supposed to happen after you eat carbohydrate. You know, you'll see your blood sugar go up a little bit, totally normal. Then your body's insulin is supposed to come along and go into your bloodstream and remove the glucose and put it into your cells for energy. So when in diabetes, that's a little bit of a slowed down process. And so then we see blood sugars just stay elevated longer.
And what's the problem with blood sugar staying elevated longer? Why is that such a problem?
Yeah. So for pregnancy specifically, those blood sugars go through the placenta to the baby. So if we have high blood sugars as a trend, and, you know, a lot of women get scared when they see their number go higher. And if it's a one-off thing where it's happening occasionally, but not as a trend, that's generally okay. When blood sugars are high constantly as a trend, then the baby can start to grow bigger, the baby can start to produce more insulin. And so basically it affects the baby while they're still growing in your stomach. Yeah.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
How about when do moms get tested? When do they find out? How many weeks are they? What does that look like?
Yeah, that screening is typically between 24 and 28 weeks. And what happens with that process is you take a 1-hour glucose screening test where you drink 50 grams of liquid sugar, essentially, that glucola drink. And if that comes back high, then you will go on to take a 3-hour glucose tolerance test. So in both tests, you'll come in, they'll test your fasting blood sugar, meaning you haven't eaten anything overnight, and then you will drink a drink. In the 3-hour test, it's 100 grams of liquid sugar. So it's quite a heavy load of carbohydrate. And then they test your blood sugar 1 hour after the drink, 2 hours after the drink, and then 3 hours after the drink. For the 3-hour test, you know, it's kind of confirming that 1-hour test said you were high. And then that 3-hour test, if you have 2 elevated blood sugars out of the 4 that they check, so they check fasting, 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour. So 4 blood sugars total. If 2 are elevated above the reference range, then that is officially a diagnosis of gestational diabetes.
Okay. We did have a question from Instagram, and I thought this was a really good question, or like something I didn't think about, I guess, prior. But she said, why do we wait until 28 weeks to test? Wouldn't it be better to know earlier? So what is it about that 24 to 28 weeks?
Yeah. So the placental hormones are really what make us more insulin resistant in pregnancy. They don't really start to pick up until the end of the second trimester. So around that time is where we start to see more insulin resistance. Does that mean someone couldn't have blood sugar issues earlier? Right. Yes, they definitely could. And sometimes too, they might notice blood sugar issues later than that test as well. But that's just kind of like the general policy now, is that 24 to 28 weeks, because that's typically where blood sugars would start to increase due to insulin resistance. Now, if someone does have other risk factors like a previous gestational diabetic pregnancy or history of type 2 diabetes, maybe in their family. Sometimes doctors will use a higher BMI, those types of things. They may end up checking you and screening you for gestational diabetes at the end of the first trimester because they want to catch anything early. So that is a great question. And sometimes they do check earlier for those women that they think may already have some insulin resistance happening. And if you pass early, you still are required to take it again, unfortunately, 24 to 28 weeks. I know that drink is no fun.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I'm actually going to include a link for the Fresh Test. I don't know if you've heard of that, Leslie, but I actually had the owner, the maker, creator of it on, I don't know, a year or so ago, because I just thought it was the neatest thing where it doesn't have to be the Glucola, although per your provider, it's going to be whatever they require. But anyways, great option. And I'll make sure to put that in the show notes for those who are listening. I know another question we get is, okay, well, actually, just based off of what you just said, since there are providers can kind of catch some precursors, are there things that what are some things that women can look for to notice, oh, I might be pre-diabetic or have pre-gestational diabetes?
Yeah. So gestational diabetes is so nuanced. So sometimes women can have risk factors and not end up developing it, or vice versa. They may not have any risk factors at all and still end up developing it. So it's important to know the risk factors, but it doesn't automatically mean it'll turn into a diagnosis. So there are certain ethnicities, Asian, Pacific Islander, that have a higher risk of gestational diabetes over the age of 30, which I know sounds so young, having PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. There is a characteristic of insulin resistance that goes along with that syndrome.
So, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yep. So if you have PCOS, it's more likely to develop gestational diabetes because you may already have some insulin resistance going on. Of course, if you have prediabetes, if you have any family history of type 2 diabetes, if you've had a previous gestational diabetic pregnancy, and then they use BMI, but I always like to clarify, really, you know, BMI is not my favorite tool as far as health indicators go. It's just looking at your weight versus your height, which doesn't tell us a lot. It's really that body fat percentage. So a higher percent of body fat can make us more insulin resistant. So those are usually the main risk factors to take a look at.
Okay. And with that, I guess the next question would be, is it preventable? Or what can women do to prevent it? Is there an option to prevent it at all?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And it's not super black and white. It's kind of in that gray area, right? So I think, and I have worked with women who have had some of those risk factors that I mentioned, and they were really concerned about developing gestational diabetes. So we worked together and they were able to pass their screening and not develop gestational diabetes. So I think for some women, it could be possible, but for other women, it may be unpreventable. Because if you have PCOS and there's already insulin resistance going on, or if you have several of those things, higher percent of body fat, PCOS, family history, then even getting that diet correct and even, you know, lifestyle factors, you may not prevent it. But I think learning those things and incorporating those things as early as possible if you have risk factors is important no matter what.
Yeah, I agree with that. It sounds like that would be like kind of what happens in your coaching program, right? For these other women that you've worked with. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yep. So I've had some like second time gestational, so they had a previous gestational diabetic pregnancy. So they wanted to start working with me to prevent it in their current pregnancy. And many of them have been able to do that. You know, I think it really just depends on each person, but starting that kind of like preventative mindset of, you know, reducing stress and we may go into these things, but like the lifestyle factors that really impact blood sugars, consistency and eating in a balanced way, doing all of those things is going to help regardless of if it's really preventable or not.
Right. Yeah. And I know that I've talked about it on here and I've seen studies where they talk about, for those of you that are listening and maybe you've had it before and you're working on getting pregnant right now or you're not pregnant yet, like we know that, right, exercise and good nutrition, and you're going to go into probably more detail about that today, but prior to getting pregnant can actually be really, really good for prevention as well, as much as it can be.
So yes. Yeah. Exciting. Yeah. For sure.
Okay, how about when it comes to managing gestational diabetes? So let's pretend that we've been diagnosed or we're dealing with a mom who has been officially diagnosed. Can we talk about the nutrition? And this is the big question I think everybody has. Does mom really have to give up all the carbs? What does that look like?
No, please don't give up all your carbs. it is really common to think that is the thing that you have to do because we know that carbohydrates turn into glucose. So it makes perfect sense that, okay, if I want to lower my blood sugar, my glucose levels, then I would lower how many carbs I eat, right? But you need carbohydrate because, like I said, it's our body's main source of fuel, but you're also growing a human. And I think sometimes what gets lost when we talk about nutrition needs for gestational diabetes is that you do have additional calorie needs because you are pregnant. So in the third and fourth trimester, you have extra calories that you need. And if you take away carbohydrate, you know, you're taking away energy and nutrients, but also calories. So it does matter that you include carb, but how you portion them and pair them. So what other things are you eating with your carb? You know, like protein and fat and fiber. And are you portioning your carbs to the right amount? So 15 grams of carb is considered one serving of carb. So just taking a look at how you're getting your carb and how you're eating them really matters.
And with that, when you're talking about carb, because we know this can be like bread and pasta and potatoes and that kind of stuff, but I'm over here like, what about my chocolate? You know? So when you're talking about that, like 15 grams, is it from any carb source? Or, and obviously not every time you're going to want to choose the healthier things and maybe an 80-20 kind of rule. But what are your advice or thoughts on that? Who are women who are just like, I'm done with all of the things I love in my life now.
Yeah, I have a huge sweet tooth, so I totally feel you on that, like wanting something sweet. I think, you know, I always tell my clients there is a way to get any of those types of cravings that you have into a healthy, balanced diet with balanced blood sugars. So typically, yeah, 15 grams of carb is really the magic number you're looking for. So if it were, let's say, a cookie, for example, and it was a large cookie that was 30 grams of carb, I would recommend to have half of it and just do 15 grams of carb from that cookie. And then you're going to have some protein or even maybe protein and fiber to go along with it. So some of my clients might include their sweet treat as part of their well-balanced meal. Some may do it with a snack that has some protein in it, but absolutely you can have your sweet treats.
I love it. Thank you. That makes me feel better. Yes, yeah. That's good. You talked about timing meals. Are you able to expand on that a little bit? What you mean by that? How many meals? How often?
Yeah. So, you know, nutrition, again, is going to be personal for each woman that I work with. So some women may notice that my general recommendations, they can tweak that a bit, I guess. But in general, what I would say is eating about every 2 to 3 hours is key, and having about 3 meals and 3 snacks a day. Now, some women might be able to take out like a morning snack and have no other issues with her blood sugars. But for the most part, we want to eat about every 2 to 3 hours because that keeps blood sugars most stable across the board without dipping low and then spiking high.
Okay. And how do people track it? So for women, again, who have never done this before, what does it look like when they're tracking it? Also, I have a question about I've heard, and maybe you know the ranges for what this would look like for a mom when she does that 3-hour test and she tests, you know, several of them or whatever, what the numbers have to be in order for her to be able to do it by diet versus using insulin. And then once you're on the diet one, or if you're able to use diet along the way, how do you track it?
So the tracking of the blood sugar is going to be at home 4 times a day. So they're going to want you to track or test your fasting blood sugar, and then either 1 or 2 hours after breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it really depends on your provider as to what they are looking for as either a 1-hour or a 2-hour test goes. So the difference in those two numbers, why someone would want to look at a 1-hour number versus a 2-hour number, is that after eating, hypothetically, our blood sugar is going to be the highest that it would get 1 hour after eating. Then at 2 hours after eating, it's looking more at, is your insulin doing its job, your body's insulin, doing its job to lower your blood sugar? So some providers want a 1 hour number, some want a 2 hour number, and then they should give you that information of what they want you to test. And 1 hour, your blood sugar needs to be under 140, 2 hours under 120. Again, with that, some okay. providers pick their own goals. So I say that, and you might come to find out that your provider has a different goal for you in mind, but those are the standard goals for after eating. And then fasting, the most standard goal for fasting is under 95, which is recommended by the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, as well as the American Diabetes Association. Now, some providers will also require a fasting a little more conservative, under 90, which is pretty challenging to do without the help of insulin, but it can be done on occasion. And so the second part of your question, I think, was do those numbers change if they're on insulin? Is that what you were asking?
I was curious about when they do the test at 28 weeks for gestational diabetes, what puts them into what numbers, just so women know what they're looking for, are going to put them into you need insulin or you can manage this by diet alone.
Yeah, I gotcha. So really, they don't judge that off of the 3 hour test. They would judge that off of your tracking numbers. So you're going to get the diagnosis off of that 3 hour test, and then they're going to give you a meter and probably a log sheet to go home and check your blood sugars. And then you're going to turn that in usually after a week or maybe 2 weeks. Again, kind of varies by provider. And they're going to look at that and say, again, it's all a little bit subjective. So one provider might be more liberal and say, I'm okay with, you know, 3 out of 7 of these fasting numbers each week, because you're checking one day every morning of the week. Some providers might be okay with you not starting insulin, even if like 3 out of 7 are elevated. There's other women I work with whose doctors say, okay, 2 numbers are over or 1 number's over, we're starting insulin. So I always say that is a fantastic question to pose to your doctor or your provider after your diagnosis. You would say, at what point do you consider starting me on medication? There's oral medications or insulin if my blood sugars are out of range, because it's different for each different provider.
So with that in mind, and since I know that you probably have not listened to the last 100 episodes of my podcast, informed consent is kind of my like thing. And it makes me wonder if this is what sounding, if it's such a subjective thing, which a lot of things in pregnancy and birth are subjective when it comes to your provider. It sounds like this might be a question that you ask maybe even in the first trimester. Hey, when I have that test, you know, week, whatever, what would it look like if, and then maybe even interviewing some different providers, depending on their response. Would you say that's a good idea?
Yes, absolutely. Because the thing is, and I'm all about women advocating for themselves too, the glucose meters that you use to test your blood sugar at home, great technology. They're not 100% accurate. And also there's something called a continuous glucose monitor that a lot more gestational diabetic women are using. It's a meter that you would put on your arm that can continuously track your blood sugar. Also not very accurate in pregnancy. So, you know, we're using those as a tool and it's great. We should keep up on your blood sugars. We want to know about what they're doing. But this whole idea of fitting people into kind of a box, like, okay, you were diagnosed with this, so we're going to treat you this way. We're going to treat everybody that has gestational diabetes this exact way, is sometimes frustrating to me, because if you were to maybe take a look at their growth scans or their ultrasounds and see that everything looks wonderful, the baby's overall size is measuring normal, their abdominal circumference, which is important for gestational diabetes, it's measuring proportionately, the amniotic fluid is great, you know, there are no issues, then to me, you know, just logically, that would say that your blood sugar numbers, even if there's a couple that are over, don't look to be impacting the baby's overall growth at this point.
Yeah.
So, I like so that. Having that knowledge and asking your doctors for the research, these are all good things to do.
Awesome. How about, what would you say to women that what happens if their numbers are showing high? Say that they're not on the insulin side of things. They're looking to do this with food. What would that look like for them?
Yeah. So that's why, you know, with my coaching program, I like to schedule an actual phone call where I talk through their exact situation, because I can have three different women with gestational diabetes and higher numbers, but their numbers might be higher for different reasons. So like we said, that spacing, the way that you space meals out can impact blood sugars, portioning, you know, avoiding carbs actually can cause rebound higher blood sugar numbers. And since avoiding carbs is typically the standard advice given, a lot of times it involves adding carbohydrate back in to bring blood sugars down, which I know sounds counterintuitive, but I see it happen all the time. So it really depends why the person's blood sugar is high. And that's what I like to get to the root of when I work with people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. On the other side of the spectrum, would that be the same information for women who have low numbers all of a sudden?
Yeah, so really I like to take a look at someone's pattern, like their food log, and see, you know, when are they eating, what are they eating, what else is going on. Interestingly enough, sometimes artificial sweeteners and sugar substitutes can cause low blood sugars because they are very sweet. And so when we taste them, for some people, we all have different sensitivities to this, but for some people, your body is going to release more insulin because that sugar-free product is really sweet. They can range anywhere from 200 to 50,000 times sweeter than regular sugar, which is bonkers to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. So what can happen, and I've seen this happen with some clients, is they have like their protein bar or smoothie that has several of those types of products in it. And then what's happening is they're having low blood sugars afterwards because their body releases more insulin, thinking a lot of sugar's coming in, but it's not actually glucose. And so now they have extra insulin and they can dip low. So it really is a lot of like digging and looking into exactly what's going on in your specific situation. And, you know, whether you work with me or not, I do highly recommend that you team up with a dietitian because it's so individualized.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think winging it on your own as best as you can might be somewhat effective. There's a lot of good information on the internet. It's a matter of making sure you're accessing the right information, but then working with somebody one-on-one who can say like, wait, no, what did you just eat? And I mean, you're not going to find that exactly online. So
yeah,
I agree with you totally. And it makes me wonder too, you had mentioned the sweeteners. Are there any specific sweeteners that are more likely to do that than others?
You know, not necessarily, but I see it, I think, more so when there's a product. And that's another thing, is looking at the ingredients, you know, and being able to pick out like what is causing that to happen. But it's usually on products that have multiple different artificial sweeteners or sugar substitutes. So, you know, like an artificial sweetener is something that's man-made, like a Splenda or an Equal. And then your sugar substitutes are like monk fruit and stevia that are natural. But all of those things kind of lumped together can cause that same reaction. So when you have products that have three or four different variations of those things in them, I think that's where it might cause that type of reaction for some people.
Got it. And then the big question. How is having gestational diabetes going to affect my birth? One of the biggest questions is, am I instantly going to need an induction?
Yeah. So research says with diet control, gestational diabetes, that it's recommended to deliver by 39 and 6, I believe. This is something you should definitely verify with your doctor, but that's basically 40 weeks, right? So a lot of times when women are getting the diagnosis, say back at 26 weeks and being told that day, okay, well, we're going to have to induce you, that's a red flag. They shouldn't be telling you that you're going to automatically be induced because you could manage your blood sugars beautifully and not need that induction when time comes. It really depends on what your blood sugars look like, what baby's growth looks like, blood pressure, things, and you have a higher risk to have higher blood pressure with gestational diabetes. So that's why I mentioned that one. But no, you don't automatically need to be induced. So again, with this, I would recommend asking for the research, making them tell you exactly why. And then I think you can also advocate for yourself. Like, you know, I don't want to come in at 38 weeks. Can I come in every other day in the 39th week? And you check out baby, and that makes you guys, you know, the providers feel better about how things are looking. And it makes me feel better because I get more time before being induced.
Yeah. You know, with that, I know that the next question is going to be, what if I'm on insulin? Does that mean it's an instant induction?
It also doesn't mean instant induction. It's how well are your blood sugars being managed, really, with either option, whether diet controlled or on insulin. So there can be situations where women are on insulin and are well managed and blood sugars are beautiful, and they may be able to go a little bit longer. But again, very specific, individualized, patient-centered care, sure, basically, is what yes, I advocate for, which we don't see a lot of. But I think, you know, really taking a look at your specific situation, because again, you can have different women all on insulin and have different results with blood sugars, have different things going on with their history and their health.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you brought up was that big baby or that macrosomia. And it makes me curious, I just want to hear from your end of things. So something that we know is true is that late-term ultrasounds, based on that information alone, can be pounds off, give or take. So what are they measuring to determine baby is big or not? And then at which point can mom trust that? Like, what should mom be looking for as markers to tell her that my baby is actually at a point that is unsafe for my body to give birth at, or we should be looking at this, or it's really just part of the process and my body's going to be capable of doing it?
Yeah, you know, this is a great question, and it may be a little out of my scope of practice since I'm, you know, dietitian. I'm not an expert at reading ultrasounds, although I do understand they are not 100% accurate. And the other thing, if I understand correctly, ultrasounds do not measure the fat, right? And what we worry about with a large baby as far as gestational diabetes goes is shoulder dystocia at delivery, which is where your shoulder, babies with gestational diabetes can deposit fat differently than a baby without gestational diabetes, and specifically around their shoulders. And then they worry about, right, baby's shoulders getting stuck at delivery. However, the ultrasounds, as far as I am aware, don't measure fat. So they're just looking at the overall size. And we know that genetics also play a role in baby's overall size. And we know that moms can birth bigger babies. So, you know, this is where I always defer to doulas and birth educators to really make sure you're advocating and know your rights and knowing what questions to ask when you're there, you know, at your appointments or even in that labor and delivery room too.
Yeah, I agree with you. It makes me curious, since you coach a lot of women that are going through this, do you have any idea of, once women start working with you, like how many of them go on to have these very big babies that they're unable to birth? And or like, what does that look like for people that come into your practice? What are their outcomes look like, knowing that it'll be very different for every woman? But do you have like a general idea of what that looks like for moms?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something I don't track, but I probably should. And that's assuming, too, that my clients share with me when they deliver. Most of them do. Not all of them come back and share what, you know, baby's weight was. Most of them do. And, you know, most of them are coming out truly 6, 7, low 8-pound babies. I'm not having an overall experience of women telling me that they're delivering these 9, 10-pound babies. I can think of, in the past 4 years I've been doing this, I can think of maybe 5, like a handful of moms who have told me that they did deliver big babies. So it's not a common thing I see. And I also think, you know,
well, with those 5, sorry, I just like with those 5, were those vaginal births?
You know, I'd have to go back and look. I know a couple of them were C-sections. But I don't remember. You know, to be honest.
No, that's fine. And this is just me being curious.
So. Yeah. No, it would be good to track for sure. It's interesting. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you do hear that a
okay,
lot.
With,
I was just going to say, you hear that a lot where moms are told they're going to deliver big babies and then they don't end up being big babies. That's what I hear more often.
Right. Yeah. And that is where we get into the like out of scope of practice, but like very curious, how else are you measuring these things? Are you palpitating? Are we just going off ultrasound? I love that you shared it does not, like it doesn't measure fat, which is true. Like they measure like the length of certain bones and heart rate and blood flow and that kind of stuff. But yes, you're right about the fat. So I think that's super interesting and a piece that women need to hear. With all of that, is there anything else that you feel like you would like to add? Because my last question is basically, what is your very best advice for moms who are looking to avoid or have been newly diagnosed with gestational diabetes?
Yeah, I think, you know, for those who are looking to maybe prevent gestational diabetes, starting with balanced nutrition, hydrating, making sure you're taking, you know, good supplements that you may need, getting exercise, but not too strenuous. Like you're doing all of the balanced nutrition and balanced lifestyle things to help manage blood sugars. And for those women who are newly diagnosed, you know, this might not be what you'd expect a dietitian to say, but have grace with yourself because it is hard and it's a lot and it's overwhelming. A lot of women are frustrated, confused, worried, feeling guilty. It's not your fault and it's something brand new you've never had to learn before. So give yourself some grace. Give yourself some grace to learn it, to figure it out piece by piece. Take a deep breath. Having high blood sugars doesn't mean you're a bad mom or, you know, that you're doing anything wrong. And so just really take some time to be positive to yourself.
I appreciate that advice. I think that's something that every mom needs to hear no matter what. And certainly when there's diagnosis like this, the first thing we do is like fingers back at us. What did I do? And how, you know, how did I cause this? And all of those things that eat us alive as moms. We do it from the time we get pregnant all the way through their lives, right? So yep. I love that advice. Yeah. The other thing I'm going to tell people to do is to go follow you. Like I said, if you guys are listening here, follow Leslie on Instagram. Like I said, like your personality is so fun. So like you give this like really great information with like a big smile and a great attitude. And I appreciate it. I felt like all the time I'm like saving or like looking at them again. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. It's so good. And you're such an advocate for women. So I really appreciate that. But with that, will you just repeat one more time where people can find you and get in touch with you? And kind of just again to like, I haven't even been in your coaching program, but just from looking at you on Instagram and listening to you here today, like if it was me and I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes, I would be like, Leslie, can you help me? So will you just include all of that information for moms here today?
Yeah. So you can follow me at Gestational Diabetes Nutrition on Instagram. And I have a website, GDM Nutrition, which will also have, you know, client wins and more about my program. And the coaching program, like I mentioned before, I built it myself because I used to work in a maternal fetal medicine office, a high risk doctor's office. And I just saw that, man, gestational diabetic women were not getting the support that they needed at all. They got to see a dietitian one time. That's it. And so I was like, it's very lacking. So I built the program with that in mind, to look at your food and blood sugars every single week, to include like a private chat feature so you can send me questions, whether you're venting or, you know, have a question about what they said at the doctor's that I might be able to help you unravel, or, hey, fasting is high again, what can we do? So it's literally like I'm your dietitian on demand once we start working together.
That's awesome.
I really want to support women so that they can have a healthy pregnancy and deliver a healthy baby, because I think that's not being expressed, right? When they get this diagnosis, they're first told all of the things that can go wrong, which is important to tell women the risk factors of uncontrolled blood sugars, but it's never followed up with, we're going to monitor you. You can have healthy blood sugars. You can deliver a healthy baby. Things can turn out just fine, you know? So at least that's what I hope to provide for the women that work with me.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you for your time today. Thank you for your passion and for all the good that you were doing with women everywhere. And I appreciate it. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
If you loved what you heard today, the very best way to support this podcast and help other moms to find it is to leave a quick review. I read one at the beginning of the episodes, and I would love for yours to be next. And if you're ready for even more pregnancy, birth, and postpartum goodness, come join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I will hold your hand and walk you through pregnancy and birth step by step so you're totally prepared for a birth you'll love. See you next week.